Well, welcome back. Welcome anew. You have landed yourself right smack dab in the middle of the Further Faster podcast. I'm Joseph McClendon III, and our outcome here is always to do exactly what the name implies, and that is to assist you in going further, faster, in becoming wealthy. And around here, wealthy means to be healthy, happy, and financially abundant. And my guest today is one of, if not the greatest MMA fighters on the planet. And he will tell you that there's another fight, and it's another important fight that we all need to do. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is what's called a cliffhanger. So grab a pad and paper, and I'll be right back with Justin Wrenn. Well, welcome back. Welcome back. I am truly excited and honored to talk to our guest today. His name is Justin Wrenn. And as I said before, he's a world-renowned MMA fighter. And I've followed his career for a long time. And I had the opportunity to meet him just a few days ago in an event that I was at. And but I didn't get a chance to meet him then. As a matter of fact, we'll talk a little bit about how we came to how he's on this show here today. But I will say this, Justin is an amazing human being in and outside of the ring. And one of the things that he understands, and that is that what we always say, and that is the secret to living is giving. And he has also conquered his own fights, obviously. But one of the things that he does is he reaches out and he has dedicated his life to assisting others. He is the founder and the president of the Fight for the Forgotten organization, and it provides clean water and education and empowerment to, let's just say, the forgotten types of people all over the world, everywhere. And he's here, really, you know, we have him on this show, as I said before, to one of the things that I love about him is that he has an outcome to not just be a motivational speaker and just empower people, but give you tools and tips and strategies to help you do that. So please help me welcome my guest, Justin Wrenn. Justin, thank you so much for being on the show.
Hey, I can't thank you enough. I'm just truly honored and excited, like you said, but I'm just grateful. So thank you for having me here. And really, this thanks is coming from my first experience at UPW, and one of my favorite parts was anytime you got up and spoke and told us, pins down, stand up. And I was really feeling it. I think one time we locked eyes and I was laughing because I jumped to my feet and I was doing spirit fingers. I was also almost in a wrestling
match.
And I was just ready to go. So thank you so much for helping us. Oh, breakthrough.
It is my absolute pleasure. And as the kids say, Justin, game recognizes game, because I followed you and I've actually seen, you know, some of your presentations as well. And as I was saying to everybody, you're not, you know, you're, I think it was Joe Rogan who said that everything that you do with an outcome of goodness and an outcome to serve others, to make a difference in other people's lives. And as he said, even when you're kicking somebody else's ass.
Well, that's true. I think I was first, you know, getting my hand raised and thinking, is this it? Is that all? There's got to be something more. I'd get my hand raised. And I was a two-time national champion in wrestling. I'm in the Black Belt Magazine Hall of Fame. I was on the Ultimate Fighter and 15-2 professionally as an MMA fighter. But until I combined that performance with purpose, I truly was empty. People could be chanting my name in the crowd, and I had just won maybe a highlight reel knockout or submission. And I would be thinking, why doesn't this feel right? And it was because I was fighting against people, but I wasn't fighting for people.
Right. Wow.
And whenever I combine those two, that's where the magic happened. That was like kind of the birthplace of miracles in my life. And I think we've parlayed that and transferred that into the lives of others, which has given my life complete purpose. And I can pursue that purpose with passion. And yeah, it's been good fighting for people.
No doubt. And I want to dig deeper in that. And I want to kind of, here's the way I always look at it. Very few people on the planet ever get to experience the level of what they would call success that you were just describing there. And so very few people can fathom you know, getting all those kind of accolades and getting all those kind of things, that not being it, because a lot of people feel like, you know, getting the money, getting the fame, getting the accolades and things like that, that is the pinnacle. So most people never experience that. But you're here to say, and I'm here to say it as well, that that isn't it. You know, it's just like telling somebody, listen, it's not the money. You know, it's not the money. But when people don't have the money, they have no idea that it's not the money.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think Jim Carrey said, I wish everybody could have their dreams, their success, their fame and money, just to realize that's not it.
Yeah.
And Joseph Campbell wrote something to the effect of a quote that says, I was climbing, one of the worst tragedies in life is climbing the ladder only to realize it was up against the wrong wall.
Oh, and that
explains it perfectly in my scenario. Yeah.
It really does. Do us a favor and share us a little bit about, you know, your upbringing. What made you the kind of guy you are to, first off, to step into the ring? Because quite honestly, that scares the hell out of me. And I always say that better judgment for me would be, nah, I'm not going to do that. Just walk into a ring with a guy like you that's going to take my head off. I don't think so. But what was it that made you, that brought you up to that place? And then we'll go beyond.
Well, I would go back to my childhood and say I found martial arts because I grew up getting very heavily bullied, extremely bullied, from third grade to eighth grade. And when I found martial arts and MMA and the UFC, when I picked up that VHS tape, I thought, these guys don't get bullied. And at a very fundamental moment in my life, or foundational moment, where I showed up to my middle school crush's birthday party. And the invitations were, it was a costume contest. Winner was going to get a prize. And the prize was a Dr. Pepper gumball machine filled with Dr. Pepper flavored gumballs. And I wanted to get that. Her dad worked there. They had a Dr. Pepper machine in their house, was the rumors at school. And she loved Transformers. So I decided I'm going to go all out. I'm going to try to, you know, catch her attention, catch her eye. I really liked her. And she loved Transformers. Her favorite was Optimus Prime. And so it was around the Super Bowl time, and there was this little, I don't know, display at the grocery store, and it was a guy in a three-point stance in the Heisman, and it was like Dr. Pepper cardboard. So I thought, oh, what if I transform into a Dr. Pepper transformer, and I'm Dr. Optimus Pepper? And so my mom helped me put a 24 pack on my head and a chest plate and a shield and a sword and 12 packs on my arms. And I went to the party thinking, my mom's like, you got this. And we went, her grandmother opened the door. Her name was Mimi. And Mimi goes, she's going to love this. And the rumors at school are true. We walked through, there's the Dr. Pepper machine. I don't have to pay. I just push the button. I got that in one hand, the shield and sword in another, and walked to the backyard. And when the door opened, I was blasted with flashes of light. And my eyes are adjusting, but my ears are hearing the sound of laughter. And when my eyes adjust, I see that nobody's dressed up. It's only me. Which wouldn't have been as big of a deal if we just kind of played it off. But my middle school crush crushed me when she said, I can't believe you thought you were good enough to come to my party.
Oh, wow.
And then next to her, a guy named Tyler said, you're worthless. And then my notorious middle school bully, who set it all up, he masterminded the whole thing, very premeditated. He said, you should just kill yourself. And which was at that formative age, you believe the things people say about you.
No doubt, no doubt.
But also the year before, we lost a friend, Landon, to suicide.
Suicide, yeah.
And so to have that, for all of us, but especially for me, and then to be telling me to do the same thing, that's where I was crushed. And I had a self, it was a tape recorder that was just on repeat. That was, you're not good enough, you're worthless, maybe you should just kill yourself. So about a month later, I found the UFC VHS tapes, and I loved the human chess match of it. But I also thought, if I could transform into that, maybe I won't get bullied. Maybe I'll be invited to the party for real. Maybe it'll be an after party for one of my fights. And so I went on that path, and I found two Olympic gold medalists as high school coaches. My parents sent me 67 miles from our front door to the school's front door. I was getting there before sunup to work out with them, getting home after sundown to work out with them a second time. And that proximity is power part. I started learning from the best, and they told me I could be a national champion or state champion. Write it down, put it somewhere you can see it. Mm. I wrote down national champion, and I just listened to your podcast about dreams and turning those into visions and revisiting those and with the emotional feeling of it. So I put national champion above my bed on my mirror. On my mirror when I'm brushing my teeth. I'm waking up dreaming about it. I'm falling asleep. I'm waking up thinking about it. I'm falling asleep dreaming about it. And so I won 10 state championships. I was a 5-time All-American. I was a 2-time national champion. And I left high school straight to the Olympic Training Center. And so that's kind of the formative years, was I was just trying to be someone so different than that kid. Mm-hmm. And now it's turned into so much more whenever I've really faced it, felt it. When you face it all and feel it all, I think that's where the magic happens. It really is.
And I am chomping at the bit to go deeper into more of what you're doing now. And I want to really kind of unpack some of the things that you said, because it is critical in terms of understanding those elements of what made you who you are. But before we go there, I want to even back up a little bit further. Sure. And here's the question. And that is, what is it about you, or where did you learn to look for something else other than let that, as you called it, tape recording, you're not good enough, and why don't you just kill yourself, and what made you, you know, you're not worthy, all those things. What is it that made you seek something else other than buy into that and sink into what a lot of kids in those days, not to mention, you know, the suicide, but, you know, drugs and alcohol and withdrawing and all of those things. What is it that made you seek something else? Was it chance, or was it something that you were taught?
I think so. My mom and dad are completely different people. They're no longer married, but my mom's the most positive, and she was a champion athlete. Mm-hmm. My dad is pretty negative, or the most negative that I personally know. And she just told me, you know, dream big, win big. And when that opportunity came, I said I wanted to be a wrestler. And I lost every match my first year wrestling. Mm-hmm. About a year and a half, I won one match by 1 point. I swear he slipped in my sweat. And I fell on top and ended up winning. But when I went on the mats for the first time in that first year, I was hesitating. I was timid. I was telegraphing everything that I was about to do. So they knew how to reverse it. They knew how to stop it. And I had no chance. But whenever I got around these guys that had been there, done it at the highest level, been the world champions. And then they said, you don't even have to believe in yourself right now. Believe in us. But we're showing you the right thing to do.
Yeah. You know, and again, to go back, because we all have those tape recordings. And those tape recordings, my parents were very, very supportive. My mom was, I'll share with us a little bit about this, because you and I share that in common with regard to giving and giving back. That's where I learned it from. My father was very competitive. He was an Olympic hopeful, if you will, in those days. But the things that they said, like you said, your mom said, you know, dream big, win big. Those things are tape recordings as well. And so, at the risk of sounding like I know, that may have been what overrode, or at least got you to look and grab that VHS and take a look at it and go, well, this is possible as well.
Absolutely. When I won the national championship in wrestling, you have something called a blood rag that you put into your singlet. And if you bust a nose or anything else, you grab that and you wipe it down. Well, inside of my blood rag was a note from my mom that said, dream big, win big. And so whenever I won the national championship, she wrote that years before. And so whenever I won, I ran straight up. I didn't even get my hand raised at first. I ran straight up into the crowd, jumped, and pulled that blood rag out that had her note in it that said, dream big, win big. And I said, Mom, we did it.
This is spectacular. And all of the pieces are lining up, everybody that's listening, further, faster. And then real quickly, I want to go over what you said with regard to you wrote it down and you visited it more often. You put it on your board. All of those things, those make the difference. I always say that I don't know one champion that doesn't do some sort of ritual like that, or hasn't done some sort of ritual like that, all the way back to somebody like Muhammad Ali, who would, you know, yell out, I am the greatest. Some sort of commitment to changing and speaking out their identity of what they want and who they are.
So not to go too deep into this, but
no, please come on. This is the deep place, baby.
Okay. So next to national champion on my ceiling, my coaches told me that there used to be a wrestling magazine called WIN, Wrestling International News. And I've been on the cover of that. But before that, I clipped out my two favorite wrestling moves and put it to the left and to the right, pictures of it being done, a belly to back suplex and a lateral drop, two names of moves. My first national championship I won was with a move on the left. My second national championship I won was with the move on the right.
Wow.
My last fight, I hit both of those moves. And I told my coaches, I told my mom, I told my fiance, this is what I'm going to do. And visualize it in the float tank, was doing ice baths and saunas, which I just got done doing. But that's why my hair's a little wet. And just visualize while I'm in there what I have to do to make it happen. And then that way, when you're in there, it just comes.
You know, one of the things that you do, thank you for that. One of the things that, you know, I heard you say on your, which we will put in the description here. I want everybody to go and take a look at your sizzle reel and everything, because one of the things that you've said a couple times in there, which is, you know, the foundation of what we do around here. And that is, it's not just motivation, it's tools, strategies, and processes and things to get you to where you're going. And what you just described there is another process, is a strategy. And again, I don't know one champion. I don't know anybody that is at that level of success that most of us dream to be or want to be, it doesn't do something like that, programming yourself. And it's not by, it's no mistake that you won your championship by doing those two things. That is the programming. That is what makes us go further, faster. So thank you so much for sharing that with us. Yeah, and so, you know, we're going to take a break here in just a little bit, but before we shift, share with us a little bit about what it's, you know, like you said, you were there with your hand raised and you're, you know, getting all those accolades and everything. Share with us like that moment when you realize, oh, wait a minute, there's got to be something more. There's got to be something more. How many times did that happen before you went, I'm going to do something else?
Oh, it happened at least 10 times. And I fell into addiction. I had a surgery. I fell into Oxycontin addiction. They just gave me the pills like it was candy, said it was
addiction. Yeah.
And I was destroying my life and destroying my dreams and visions and really my potential. And so whenever I sobered up and I had this moment, I got kicked off my fight team. Mm-hmm. I was invited back a year later, but it was 34-1. They're like, Justin, you can't continue this way. And you've got to figure this out and you've got to take care of you. And so there was a suicide attempt. And whenever I woke up from that, I just had this gasp. It was a doctor said it was 100% a lethal cocktail. And whenever I woke up 18 hours later, it was and just in my head, and sorry to curse, but it was, holy shit, I'm alive. Fuck, I'm still here. And that moment of, it was all shame right at first, but whenever I felt this voice or something bigger than me, the universe, God, whatever you would say, said, be grateful for that beating heart in your chest, which felt like it was going to explode. I thought I might have a heart attack. And then I said, okay, I'm grateful for the breath in my lung or beating heart in my chest. And then it was another voice, be grateful for the breath in your lungs. And I took a deep breath and I just started weeping and crying. And right after that, I decided, life's not about me. What can I do? How can I serve? And so I became an official volunteer at the Denver Children's Hospital. Was doing that 3, 4, 5, 7 days a week. Then the Denver Rescue Mission, and then inner city youth group. And so for a year, I wasn't getting paid. I was a volunteer. And it got me to a point to where I found purpose through service. And that lit me up. And I found myself saying a prayer. God, what do you want me to do with my life? Towards the end of that year of service. And I would say that without visualization, without trying to conjure anything up, I had a real vision. I just got back from Vegas and there was the sphere and the screens are all around you. That's the closest thing I could say to what happened to me. It was, I was in the vision and I was walking down a footpath in the forest. I was clearing vines and thickets out of the way. I heard drumming. I kept walking. I heard singing. I came into a clearing. I saw these twig and leaf huts that were the shape of domes. I met these incredible, amazing people, but I just had this knowledge about them. They were forgotten, hungry, thirsty, poor, sick, oppressed, and enslaved, that they called someone master. And I came out of that vision and I cried more than, I cried a little puddle of tears. I mean, like a grandma's cookie size puddle. And bigger than a silver dollar. And I was weeping and I had no idea who they were, where they were. And honestly, I felt a little crazy. I thought, was that a psychedelic reactivation from what I was using? Was that a psychotic episode? Am I crazy? And I can't tell anybody this, but I did write it down. And I wrote that down. And 3 days later, I showed up at an event. I wasn't going to talk to really anyone. My friends pulled me to it. And it was this guy on stage. And he started sharing a story, living with the Maasai tribe, living with the Vanuatu tribe that invented bungee jumping, being buddies with Bear Grylls, being a survivalist, a humanitarian, a philanthropist. And I was like, if there's one guy on earth that I would tell this to, it's him. But I got in my friend's car and he started it up. And then I go, wait, time out. I got to go at least give this guy my phone number. And there was a line of people waiting to talk to him. And when that died down, I just gave him my number and said, if you get a chance to give me a call, I'd like to tell you something. He goes, hey, man, I'm here. Tell me. I tell him the vision. And I didn't want to really. I was like, I'm not really ready for it yet. And he's like, no, tell me it now. So I tell him. And he says, I know who they are. And I go, what? And he goes, they're the Pygmy people. And I'm like, who? And he goes, they're in the Congo Basin rainforest across 8 or 9 African nations. And I'm like, where? And he says, in 3.5 weeks, I'm going. You should go with me. And I was like, this is wild and crazy. But then he told me that the rebels took over the airport. They took over a 1-million-person city. His team canceled 3 days before that. And because it wasn't safe to go to. He goes, look, but if you go, I'll go. But you got to get my car and come tell my wife.
I'm like, oh, I don't know. I'm going to jump in here just for a second because we got to take a break. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is your second cliffhanger, because when we come back, I want to dig a little bit deeper and find out not just that journey there, but I have a little bit more I want to find out about what goes on before so we can go deeper. So grab some water, grab something. I'll be right back with Justin Wren. Hey, what's good? It's me, Joseph McClendon III. And let me get real with you just for a second. Now, you've probably heard me talk about this before, something that I call the thieves of our dreams. Procrastination, hesitation, fear of failure, fear of success, self-doubt, self-loathing, imposter syndrome, and fear of rejection. Well, let me ask you a question. What if you could not only retrain your brain and your nervous system to automatically default to your absolute best thoughts, emotions, and behaviors, but you could also do the same for others that are going through difficult times and challenges in their own lives and things that are stopping them from creating the life of their desires? Well, this is what I call neuroencoding. And at the risk of sounding arrogant, these are the same tools, methods, and strategies in neuroscience that I've used to operate in the upper 5% of all of my own businesses, especially as a coach, a speaker, and a presenter for the last 30 plus years. The Neuroencoding Institute provides you with the knowledge, the tools, and unmatched support to become a certified neuroencoding specialist and guide you to the life of wealthiness. And remember, wealthy means to be healthy, happy, and financially abundant. Go to neuroencoding.com to speak to an enrollment specialist today, and I look forward to serving you at the highest level.
You're enjoying this episode on Angel Phoenix Productions Podcast Network. To explore our complete lineup of quality programs and media production services, head on over to angelphoenix.com or like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Angel Phoenix Productions.
Well, welcome back. Welcome back. I'm here with my amazing guest, Justin Wren. And as we were talking just on the break, that there has not been enough time and there won't be enough time to squeeze all of this in. And he has agreed to come back and actually go a little bit deeper. And before we took a break, he was talking about that he had woken up from a suicide attempt and he heard a voice. And so my question to you is, before we go further, not to psychoanalyze too much, Justin, whose voice was that? If you were to look back now and say, you heard a voice, whose voice was it?
You know, for the audience, I think they can maybe help me decide, or they can decide for themselves, but it might have been my higher voice or higher self. But honestly, I think it was God, whatever created me, the creator that gave me life, that breathed life into me, that brought me here at this time. Mm-hmm. In history and in the universe, I believe it was that. And I'm so grateful for that source of love that loved me enough to allow me not to be successful with that suicide attempt.
Yeah. It's been my experience and when I practiced for a long time, and my own experience as well, that when I dig deep and I go back and I try and recreate that voice and other people as well, the voice was my own voice. Mm. Maybe it was coming through somebody else, but when I look at who was speaking to us, it's like my friend Deepak Chopra always says, it is the speaker behind the speaker. It's the voice behind the voice. It's generally our own voice, unless you identify this. Sometimes it's our mother's voice or our father's voice. But if it's a voice that impacts us, you know, we always say at the Neuroencoding Institute that if I tell you something, you might believe me. But if you tell you something, you will believe me.
Ooh, I love
and
that.
So, yeah, oftentimes that voice is our own. And I'm not sure if that was yours, but yeah. I will say to people, it is like, what is intuition? It's like we always say, you know, I should have listened to myself. I should have listened to myself. Yeah, that's you speaking. And sometimes it does take that type of an epiphany or cathartic moment where, you know, all hell is breaking loose, where, you know, where we do all of a sudden listen to that voice. And you've given us at least two examples when that happened. You know, when you got bullied and you were told that you weren't, you know, want to kill yourself. You know, there was something inside that said, win big. Or dream big, win big.
Yeah.
You know, that's your mom's voice.
That was my mom's voice. And absolutely, I believe that this could have been my own higher self, who I want to be, I can become. Like, that person would be just so grateful to have this chance. And honestly, that's how I wake up every day. I wrote down what I'm grateful for today. I sent it to one of my friends from UPW, Joss. And I was saying I'm grateful to be on Joseph's podcast today. He impacted me greatly. I'm grateful for the morning I had with Amy, and I am just grateful for the breath in my lungs and the beating heart in my chest
today. That is so, so, so beautiful. And, you know, and I'm grateful because I didn't get to meet you personally. You actually met one of my amazing business partners, Kay.
Kay was incredible.
She was there, by the way. She was there with her sister, who is my other business partner, her sister's daughter. We had a great time. So again, I want to pack more in. I want to share with, you know, when we were at the beginning, at the top of this break, at the end of the last break, you were telling us about how you had again followed the freaking formula. You wrote it down. You said, this is going to happen, blah, blah. You know, you did all of this stuff and you were contributing and all that stuff. And then all of a sudden you come across this individual who said that you got to convince his wife. How did that work out afterwards? Share with us from there.
Well, I got in his truck. We go to his house. Jess, his name's Caleb, and Jessica was pregnant and she had an infant or a toddler running around. I was like, I can't tell her. He's like, yeah, go ahead and tell her. So I start telling her, and she looks at Caleb and goes, Caleb, you got to take this guy. And I just said, wait, y'all told me that people are being killed in the streets, that U.S. State Department says no one for any reason go there. And we don't even have a flight in from Uganda to Congo. So why don't we postpone this till next year? Why don't we wait till the conflict is over? Are you sure we're supposed to go? And they just started coaching me. I guess what happened when the 3 days before, when I had the vision and the three people he was taking canceled, Jess said to reconsider it. Maybe he's not going alone. He's not going solo. And so the day we met, she said, have you gotten your sign yet that you're supposed to go or pull out? And then he spoke. I met him. I got in his truck. We went over there. And their coaching to me was, if you don't go, you'll never know.
Yeah.
You always wonder what could have, should have, would have happened. And I'm like, so we're just going to go and find a pilot in Uganda that will take us. And he's like, yep. And so to fast forward, we went, we took a buddy Colin with us. We fly in all these planes. We land on a grass runway. We drive, we get on motorcycles. We sleep in a motel that was really a mud hut that had like bullet holes in it. We get out and we hike about 30, 45 minutes. Actually, we did the motorcycles after the motel. We go across the river on a dugout canoe. We hike for about 30, 45 minutes. Then we hear drumming. Then we hear singing. And we keep walking. We come into a clearing. I forgot to mention in the vision, the first guy I met, I could count his ribs and he was coughing. I knew that he was sick. First guy we meet, he's got tuberculosis. He's coughing. I get so weak in the knees because the vision was so real and now it's happening in front of my eyes that it was so surreal, I couldn't stand. And Caleb and Colin are grabbing my trap, saying on each side of me, saying, "This is your vision."
Oh, wow.
No, this is your vision. And I didn't know how to handle it. I didn't know if things like this happen. In fact, it's pretty rare for me to share this part of the story because it's so out there. And I know it can sound crazy. I know it can sound like fluff stuff or woo-woo. I didn't believe in stuff like this until it happened, and it hasn't happened since.
Right.
There has been some pretty special things that have happened, but nothing that real that was so surreal that changed the trajectory of my life. The suffering was so great that we saw slave masters coming to saying, "Hey, what are you doing with my property? I own these people." I buried a young boy named Andy Bo. He was 1.5 years old. He died of waterborne disease, but also discrimination. The pygmy people aren't seen as equal, looked down upon in many, many ways. And his mom was told by the nurse, "You're too dirty to come in here."
Oh, man.
It was $1 for the pills that would have cured him. It was $3 for the one shot cure. It's too late in the game for the pills. They had $3.50 of Congolese franc. They had a chicken. They had charcoal. They had firewood. They had everything they could. And they tried to give that. And the doctor said the real reason, which is, "We won't waste our medicine on a pygmy animal," and turned him away. And that part ripped my heart apart. It crushed me. And it changed my life. That was the moment that I said, "Yes, I'm going all in." That this fight to knock out the water crisis, to fight for these people that have adopted me in. There's a lot more to the story, but it was $6 for the shovel that I buried Andy Bo with. Oh. It was $30 for the casket. And if we fast forward 12 years later, I leave in a few days with the founder of Engineers Without Borders and some other incredible people. He's on our board of directors, and we're scouting out where we're building our hospital and our school. The hospital is going to be in honor of Andy Bo, that it's going to be open and welcome to all, but especially the pygmy people will have treatment, and they'll never be turned away again.
Dude, this is so, so amazing. And again, there's not enough time to get it all in, because I do want to dig deeper. You know how I roll so far.
I know how you roll.
And I do want to say this, that, you sharing that, I have seen, certainly not at that level, but I've seen that type of suffering as well. And I want to, it was in your sizzle reel. Please tell us what you said about the numbers or the amount of slavery now compared to any time in history.
Yeah. Well, on that one, five years ago, that video from that clip of 27 million slaves exist in the world today, that's actually the low estimate. It's upwards of 40 million or more now. And that's more today on Earth than ever in human history, ever in human history. And people think it's a thing of the past. People think that doesn't happen anymore. Being in our American bubble, or we just think that, we don't have the perspective that it's alive and well, and that it's got to change. And so I'm so thankful to be able to say that we've been able to see over 1,800 people make a transition from modern day or real slavery and into a life of freedom. We haven't been able to help everyone, even close to everyone we'd like to, but we've provided clean water to over 50,000 people and built homes for families and sustainable farms and replanted tens of thousands of trees and provided sustainable livelihoods where they get paid to work for themselves and the benefit of the community. But that stat on slavery is staggering. What I've seen,
it truly is. It truly is. And I want to thank you so much for what you do. And again, I would like to again invite you back, because I want to dig deeper and to find out how can people get a hold of you. How can people follow you and maybe contribute to what you're doing as well?
Yeah. So if people want to follow Instagram, it's at the Big Pygmy. So my name my name used to be Viking. If you're watching on video, I'm like a Viking. But they named me Efeosa Mabutimong Bo. And so Efeosa means the man that loves us. I treasure that one. But Mabutimong Bo means the Big Pygmy. So I champion that
name. That is amazing.
I champion that name. That's what I want to be known as. That's who I want to be. And
it's who you are, man. It's who you are already.
It's who I am. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if people want to give and support, they can join our monthly giving club of $5 a month, $20 a month, if they'd like to, or they can give a one-time contribution. And we'd love to have you join forces with us and help us fight for people. and that's at fightfortheforgotten.org. And we're a 501c3, and we have big plans next year. We need to raise $2 million at least for the hospital. But we have a $2 million in-kind donation of all the medical equipment. So a maternity ward, a pediatrics unit, a dental suite. We just have to build the structure.
Wow, man. And everybody, you're seeing it right here. You're seeing that this is fulfillment, that yes, this is purpose. This is what it's about. The amount that you give is directly proportionate to the amount that you live, the life that you live. And so here's an opportunity to do so. He's not telling you got to get on a plane and motorcycles and, you know, trudge across the tundra and across the wilderness and all that stuff. Give what you can, make a difference. Do that. You know, I didn't get a chance to say this, but I was raised that way by a mother who we had to give. I got to be honest with you, in the very beginning, I didn't like it. She made us go door to door, you know, asking for money for St. Jude's Children's Hospital. Wow. But it is one of the most, once we did it and you start to recognize where it's going, it makes all the difference in the world.
If I could say one more quick thing, it's a Swahili proverb, and I think that it would exemplify what you just said. If you think you're too small to make a difference, try to sleep in a closed room with a mosquito. And I love that one because I have fought guys 6'7", 6'8", 6'10", finished them in the first round, but a mosquito, less than the size of a gram, has almost taken my life when I had malaria. I lost 32 pounds in 5 days. So just to end that, how much more of a difference can we make in the lives of others? We don't give ourselves so much credit.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I'm honored to have you here, and I will in advance be honored to have you back. Keep doing what you're doing. And ladies and gentlemen, always remember this, and you know, certainly to tag it or to dovetail with what he was just saying, be that mosquito, but be the positive mosquito in life about that and make a difference in people's lives. And always remember that life is always exactly what you dare to make it. This has been Further Faster, so dare to be magnificent, and we will see you at the top.
This podcast was a production of Angel Phoenix Productions. Explore more episodes of this show or other great shows on the Angel Phoenix Podcast Network by visiting angelphoenix.com. The views expressed in this show do not necessarily represent those of Angel Phoenix Productions or its advertisers, and may contain language that's unsuitable for younger listeners.